Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, it's been a pretty quiet week. The U.S. is getting ready for the World Cup this year and the 6 million visitors who are coming, if they can get in the country. And United Airlines is returning to Greenland next summer. I want to go. Those stories and more next in the travel news.
In our Smarter Travelers segment at 11:20, we have some passport reminders for you. And if you still don't have a real ID, TSA now has a policy to get you through security. Not a free policy, but at least a way to pay to get on the plane.
At 11:35, we pose the question, would you let AI book your flights? Our buddy Chris Elliott has penned a column talking about just that. Chris isn't here in person, but we'll share his insights with you.
Our odds and ends portion of the program at 11:50 has some insight from a Travel Guys listener about booking your cabin on a cruise ship. And we take a look at what travel experts see in their crystal ball for 2026.
Thanks for joining us on this rainy holiday weekend. Together, we're dreaming of sunny days and fun places. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
I've been everywhere, man.
Jamaica.
Seattle.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the January 3rd Saturday edition live of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. I'm Tom Romano. Right over there is Mark Hoffman. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Good to see you, Mark. Were you on the road this past week, or did you actually get to stay home for a while?
I was not. I was pretty much at home, and now that you bring that up, I go to Key West, make our annual trip to Key West at the end of January, but this is kind of the don't-go-any-place time of the year. There aren't too many of those sorts of times. That usually happens in August for me, and now here in the wintertime. I don't go to – we take groups to, like – I have a tour director, Scott, who takes folks to see the Northern Lights up in Alaska, and every other year he goes to Yellowstone in the wintertime because he says that's the best time to go because there's nobody there, and the animals are all over the place. But I'm not much of a wintertime traveler. You know, I kind of like – the weather to be warm and took people back on the Christmas Mystery Tour about a month ago back to Virginia. It was kind of cold. I don't do cold very well.
For our listeners that have not been with us long, if you don't know a lot about Mark, he prefers the Americas. He's not much on foreign countries with weird food. And I think he's finally getting to that age where he's not really keen on cold weather either. Got a lot of company there.
That's well done. Hey, listen, before we get formally started here, I want to do a shout out to two things. one is where I picked up this story from. KVIE, our public television station here in town, has a new news service called Abridged. And it's really cool. I mean, if you haven't subscribed to it yet and you're a PBS supporter or something, it's a really different look at the news each day and stories that you probably wouldn't normally run across. Anyway, I've run across it myself, and I'm a PBS supporter, and I really think it's kind of cool. And it's not heavily slanted one way or another. So it's just cool stories. So I recommend it. Abridged. Abridged had a story yesterday about a reopening of a Sacramento institution, and in fact, it is happening right now as we speak, because they're supposed to reopen this morning at 11 o'clock, which is why I decided not to call them. Plus, it doesn't have a whole lot to do with travel, although you would have to travel to get to Vic's Ice Cream in Land Park, which was a Sacramento tradition from 1946. It opened. A guy named Vic, believe it or not, who passed away in 1966, but the ice cream went on. It shuttered a year ago, and now it has reopened with ice cream and sandwiches and all kinds of stuff in Land Park. And I haven't been there for probably 15 or 20 years, but I'm going to put it right at the top of my list and go back and have a turkey sandwich and some of Vic's wonderful ice cream. So if you are a fan and you were unhappy about its demise, Vic's Ice Cream in Land Park is back. And if you don't have any idea what I'm talking about, then just Google Vic's Ice Cream and go to Land Park and have some. I know it's the middle of the winter. It's raining outside, but it'll stop raining one of these days. And, you know, 60 degrees is warm enough for ice cream. I mean, I think if you live in the Midwest, 40 degrees is warm enough for ice cream.
Well, there you go. You know, we all have places that that we love to go to that have closed. We could do an entire show talking about the ones we'd like to see come back. But the ones that come back are very few and far between. So good luck, Vix. Everybody get out there and support Vix. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, and at the top of every program, we start off by bringing you up to date on the travel news. And the travel news guy today, of course, Mr. Mark Hoffman. Mark, what you got for us?
Well, it's a quiet week. Most of the travel industry has been on vacation for the last couple of weeks. But here's an article that talks about the World Cup. 6 million people are expected to come here for the World Cup. And the interesting thing is, we've talked about this before, we're going to have a Super Bowl in Los Angeles. I don't know how many international visitors that attracts. But the Olympics are coming here to California. And
now, wait a minute. I have to stop you there.
Yeah.
When is the Super Bowl going to be in L.A.?
Is it this year that it's in?
No, not, this year they're
this
in Santa
season.
Clara.
No, but I mean next. Okay, I'll look it up during the break.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we weren't confused in thinking that this year's Super Bowl.
No. Yeah. But anyway, the World Cup coming here is going to bring a lot of international visitors, and of course, we've talked about how much tougher under the current administration it is to get into the country with a visa. That may very well be a good thing. But the reality is that international visitors spend a lot of money, and we're making it really hard for them to get into the country. Plus, from a lot of countries, we're tacking on a $250 visa fee. So it remains to be seen. Projections are, from U.S. tourism people, that we're going to pick up a lot of those visitors that we lost last year. They're saying that 6.5% more people will come here than came last year, which is just about the number of people that we were off from. You know, we've kind of sent a message to the planet that coming here, especially if you're not a white person, might be fraught with some inherent complications. So it remains to be seen how many of these folks will come. And of course, international visitation and the money that those folks spend is a huge positive balance of trade thing for us. So it's a good thing when people from other countries come here, spend their money, and go home. It's a very good thing for our economy and with the World Cup. And you've got countries like, for example, Colombia is going to be in the Cup. And right now the visa wait time for Colombia is 700 days. So if you have not already applied and you're not already in the system and haven't been for a while, and you're from Colombia, you're not coming to the World Cup.
Wow.
So that's part of the balance that they have. And I'm not suggesting we should just open the doors and let anybody into the country. And when people come, they have a time to leave, and they should go home when it's time for them to go home. There must be an easier way to convey this. It seems like we're sending two different messages. Come here, come here, come here. Don't come here, don't come here, don't come here. So we'll see how that all works out. I already live here, so I don't have to get in. Fortunately, I have my own passport and stuff, and they keep letting me back in. This is kind of an interesting story. U.S. airports can now request DNA from international travelers. And they haven't worked this out yet, but there's a new policy that took effect on December 26th, has expanded the government's ability to collect biometric information from non-U.S. citizens entering or leaving the country. Change is part of a broader push by the Trump administration to tighten immigration controls. Okay. One of the biggest changes is the rule no longer makes exception for age. If you're under 14 or over 79, you are exempt from this data collection. Those exemptions have been removed now. But and if you're sitting there and you're saying, well, gee, you know, DNA, so they want me to what, spit on a piece of paper or something like that? And this article does not explain how this collection is going to be done. And, you know, you're saying to yourself, well, is that really a big deal if you want to come into the country? Let me just suggest to you, let's pretend for a minute that you were going to France. Okay. And you got there and you were going through the customs in France. And the people said, well, you know, we got to have a DNA sample from you. And you're like, you got to have a what? We got to have a DNA sample. Well, I have a, you know, all of my paperwork here, you know, visa, passport, whatever it is that I need to get in the country. No, no, you're going to have, we're going to have a DNA sample. How would you respond to a request like that? Would you be okay with it? Would you say, wow, this is kind of different? Would you say no? Because, of course, if you say no to a customs official, the likelihood is that you're not going past the customs official. So I just thought this, I thought, well, that's not really a big deal. And I thought to myself, wow, if one of my tour groups got to an international country and they said we want a DNA sample from everybody, wouldn't we consider that A, weird? B, maybe a violation of something. I'm not sure what. I just don't like the way this is going. I don't. Anyways, Route 66, 100th anniversary of the old highway is this year. It started in 1926. We're going to have a lot to talk about that. If you want to make a trip down the old highway, my company, Sports Leisure Vacations, is going covering the eastern half in the spring and the western half in the fall. You can go to sportsleisure.com and find some information there. They're going to have a 100th anniversary convoy. And this is going to go, it looks like sometime in April, and make its way across the country. And anybody will be able to go. There is going to be a link to this, to the Facebook page of the 100th anniversary Route 66 convoy at travelguysradio.com so that you can find out more about that. But we are going to talk more about this old highway as the year goes on. Route 66 is kind of, you know, Tom, people ask me frequently, you've been in the travel business a long time, and, you know, what's your favorite place that you've ever been? And wow, as the years pile up and the favorite places list gets longer and the ability to go back 20 or 30 years and not forget one along the way. But I have to say, I've been traveling the Main Street of America, one of the nicknames of Route 66, for about 30 years now. And as last week, as I began work on the western side of the tour so that we can announce it in a couple of weeks, I am reminded how many cool people there are out there on that old highway. Listen, if you don't go with me, if you like off the beaten track places and stuff, you don't have to go this year, but a lot of towns and cities and little places along the highway and stuff are going to fix up and be ready for visitors. This would be the year to go, to take a trip on Route 66. It's from Chicago to Los Angeles. The less time you take, the more you will rob yourself of the true experience. Better to do a part of the road and take a longer period of time than try to do the whole thing and have to rush through it, because it's an old highway. It's not an interstate. It still exists in most places. But if you don't stop 80 gazillion times and take pictures and talk to people, you'll miss the whole point of the highway. So go ahead.
Yeah, I have to point out, Mark said something there that I think a lot of people might have missed. You mentioned the thing about the old highway, and you mentioned the people along the old highway, and that you meet. You know, you didn't talk about the, you know, giant ball of fuzz or some of the other weird anomalies, the upside down Cadillac fins and the rabbit ranch, but it's the people that run these places that you get to know. Of course, you have an advantage that some people might not. You're bringing a tour group, and you do it regularly, and you see the same, meet some of the same people time and time again. They know you, you know them. But here again, travel a lot of times is about the people in different countries. In this case, you know, Route 66 takes on its own life of a different country, if you will, and to meet the people. And with that being said, am I accurate here, Mark?
Oh yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are. A lot of quirky little things along the road, but it's the people who have created those things. It's the guy, how the heck did he think of naming a gift shop in Missouri Uranus? I'm sorry, Uranus would be the proper pronunciation, but it's more often pronounced by the latter. And then selling fudge there, calling the people who work there fudge packers, And every time somebody comes in the door yelling out, "Welcome to Uranus." And it's become a local thing. Some of the local people not too crazy about the whole idea since it's in the Bible Belt of Missouri. But it's a really fun place to stop. I mean, a really fun place to stop. And the funny thing is all the kids in town work at the gift shop there. So their parents hate the guy, but the kids are all making money. There are all kinds of places like that. Mickey Mantle's house is in Commerce, where he grew up, is in Commerce, Oklahoma. And there's a metal wall on the side. And when I was a kid, I'm sure lots of kids did this. You know, you took a tennis ball or whatever ball you had, you threw it against the wall, and, you know, you kind of had your own baseball game going on there. And if you go to Mantle's house and you see this metal wall, it's got all these dents in it. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dents in it, made by a baseball, because Mickey Mantle was the same way. He threw a ball against the side of his garage door, but you wouldn't know that if you didn't go there. And it's little nondescript house in Commerce, Oklahoma, and you go there and you think, you know, yeah, this is probably where Mickey Mantle grew up. This seems like the proper place for a guy like Mickey Mantle to grow up. So there's a gazillion of those places. I've gotten off. You've gotten me off on a tangent here.
Yes.
If you do nothing else, it's the 250th birthday of the country next year. Treat yourself to a few days on Route 66. And if you go to Chicago and you drive like to St. Louis, you'll see an entirely different scenario than if you go to Flagstaff and drive to California. And one advantage of going with a group is, you know, the highway's kind of a one-way thing. So unless you turn around and go back, you know, you're going to have to rent a car and drive one way, and that's a little bit more expensive. But if you take a tour, then, you know, you fly to Chicago, and we break in Oklahoma City, and that's where we devise east from west, because we spend 10 days on the east and 9 days on the west, so 19 days total. If you're going to drive it, and you drive it in less than 10 or 11 days, you're really not doing it justice, so... Anyways, where the hell was I here? We were in the middle of the travel news, I think, before you drug me. Look at that, how you know you could do that, too.
I do.
Yeah.
Now you don't know where you were.
Yeah, you know exactly what you're doing. I had one more story here, actually two more. Do you know that not every hotel, like if you're a Marriott brand hotel, you don't have to participate in their Bonvoy frequent guest program.
Really?
Almost all of them do, because it's to their advantage. But there's actually a Marriott in Singapore. I'm sure there are people listening to this program who will be checking in there this evening. The Ritz-Carlton Millennia Singapore is the only Ritz-Carlton property in the world that doesn't participate in the Marriott Bonvoy program. Ritz-Carlton is one of Marriott's brands now. Here's an interesting hotel story. This is also a Marriott story. Hey, Marriott, we will leave this city. We'll leave it on the quiet, because I got this story from somebody who asked me not to reveal the name of the city. A Marriott hotel in an unnamed city has been, you know, Tom, how in order to get rid of the little throwaway bottles in hotels and all the plastic they bring, they've now put large dispenser bottles of shampoo and body wash and sometimes lotion in hotels. So you go in and you pump that in, and it then you're not using a little plastic thing. A Marriott hotel in Chicago with very fancy bottles in their shower, mm-hmm. in their bathroom, has gotten caught putting cheapo stuff in the bottles instead of the brand name that's on the outside of the bottle.
Oh,
now,
my.
How did this happen? A traveler who uses that brand got to the Marriott and pumped the bottle and said, smelled the shampoo and says, this isn't, no. So they took some with them. This person happens to be a chemical analyst. And they took it and broke it down and found out that it wasn't the product that Marriott said it was. I never thought of that. But how easy would it be for a hotel to say, hey, you know, we got this really fancy stuff, except that we really don't. And how often do people sit there and plunge that thing 100 times and steal all of the body wash out of the...
I never thought about that.
This is how
you know,
this is how my mind works.
Yeah, there you go. Most of the hotels or whatever that I stay in, they don't have a label. They don't tell you that it's any particular kind of. It is what it is. and I just use it, and I'm just happy that it's there on the wall and hope there's some in it.
What are the odds that you would pull it, that you would do this, and you would get a chemical analyst who would come and who would know, who used the brand that you weren't using, and in essence, and now the person is like, I don't know what to do with this information. Should I go to the
Busted.
Hotel? Yeah. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, every Saturday at 11 a.m. At 11 a.m. Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House. This is about the time in the program where we talk about them and how wonderful the people are that work there and the fine food that they serve on a regular basis. We're out of the holidays, but that doesn't mean that if you have a birthday party or a gathering and you need a cool place to go have it, Rudy's Hideaway would be a perfect choice. And if you're a big fan of lobster, okay, there's a reason why Rudy's Hideaway is called the Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House. And you like big lobsters. They have a tank in the lobby. And in that tank are live Maine lobsters. The other day I was there, and there was one. It was, in fact, I think they called it like Godzilla or something.
Oh, no.
No, this lobster on the hoof had to have been 5 pounds, I swear. So if you want a pound and a half, 2 pound, or if you want to go a live Maine, they've got that for you. And if you don't want any of that fishy stuff, check out their prime rib. Rudy's Hideaway, always there for you, right off of Highway 50 at Hazel. When you go in, you be sure to let them know that the travel guy sent you in. All right, coming up, let's talk about passports, reminders, and the latest with TSA. If you didn't get your special real ID, there's still a way for you to get on the plane. That's next, right here with the Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark and Tom, Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, Anthony looked it up for us. Super Bowl in L.A. 2027.
Seven, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Anthony. It's nice to have somebody who can do that stuff. Appreciate you, buddy. Passports. Most folks who travel have a passport, because at some point in time they've gone to an international country. You used to be able to go to Canada and Mexico, didn't need a passport, but you do now. So if you haven't been for a while and you're thinking you can cross those borders without one, not so much. This is a great time of the year to do a passport check. So you think you know where your passport is, where you put it, go and look and make sure that it's there. And then some other things that you might indeed take a look at, is your passport still valid? And how long is it valid for? Because there are a number of countries that want your passport to be valid for at least 6 months after you arrive in their country, or at least 6 months after your scheduled departure date. So if you had a passport, you weren't paying attention, you got to Great Britain and you tried to get in, and your passport was only valid for 3 more months, they would say, Mr. Romano, I'm so sorry, but you can't come in because your passport isn't valid for the right period of time. So think about, this is a good time of the year to think about where you're going over the next coming months, over the next 12 months. Is your passport valid? You know where it is. I mean, you'd be surprised how many people have told me over the years, Tom, because I own a travel company, I can't find my passport. I thought I knew exactly where it was. And so this is the time to go, because if you can't find it, this is a good time to get a replacement now. Other things to look for. Regular passports, adult passports, last for 10 years. Children's passports, on the other hand, last for 5. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking of going someplace this year, take out the kids' passports and make sure that the one you got when they were 8 and now they are 15, 9, 10, 11, 12, oops, you're going to have to get that passport renewed. So experts suggest that you keep it in a regular place in your house. And I know some people who still put their passport in a hotel safe when they get there. We did a segment one time on the safety of hotel safes. It's not quite as safe as you think it is. But that's a possibility. Just remember not to leave it behind. Mm-hmm. Because it's very difficult to get out of the country and pass passport control with your passport if your passport is in your hotel room. That is a very, very bad thing. So if you have a passport and you're planning on making any travels this year, the other thing is we're about to talk about Real ID. I suppose there are a few people out there who said, I don't need to get that Real ID thing. I have a passport. And that would be correct. You don't need a Real ID if you have a passport. As long as you know where the passport is and you can take it with you,
yeah.
Which is back to the original point of taking a look at where your passport might be. Okay, another piece of smarter traveler information here. TSA announced this week a system that'll let travelers who don't have a Real ID still get through security at the airport. Of course, you've been able to do that for the last year and a half since the Real ID thing went into effect. It hasn't cost you anything. It's a little bit of an inconvenience. Unfortunately, about 7 or 8% of people who are traveling are showing up without a Real ID, and this is causing some problems, particularly during busy periods. So the new system starts February the 1st. After February the 1st, if you don't have a Real ID or a passport, or there's a whole list of acceptable IDs. Travel Guys Radio has a list of those. But if you don't have a Real ID or a passport, basically military ID, you're going to have to pay $45 to travel, to fly, to get authenticated. This will be good for 10 days. So if your trip is less than 10 days, you'll only have to pay once. If your trip is longer than 10 days, you will have to pay that $45 twice. Guess how you get out of paying the $45? Get a Real ID. So basically, you're being incentivized by the government at the cost of $45 a crack to get your Real ID. The process is going to be a little different from airport to airport. Obviously, it's going to happen before you go through security. You're going to present yourself at TSA and say, you know, gee, I don't have a passport. You might want to ask at the ticket counter downstairs. I don't have a passport or a Real ID. Is there anything that I need to know? But anyways, if you have a Real ID in your California driver's license, in the upper right-hand corner, there's a star in the middle of the bear. That's how you know if you have a Real ID. But if you don't, life is going to be just slightly more difficult and more expensive. So they're telling you, they're kind of secretly sending you a message. Psst, save the money. Go get the Real ID.
Question is, would you let artificial intelligence book your next flight? Huh? Details coming up next right here on The Travel Guys.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair. A world of adventure, and we take you there.
If you're a baseball fan, Sports Leisure Vacations has a trip for you. Spring training in March, 5 days in Arizona. See 5 Giants baseball games. Spend 4 nights at the Marriott Hotel. Lots of great food and even an evening with an old Giants player or coach where we'll take a trip down baseball memory lane. That's spring training in March. Also, at the end of March, the Giants will open their regular season with a series against the New York Yankees. Sports Leisure has an overnight trip that will take in 2 of the Yankees-Giants games, stays at the Hyatt Hotel in downtown San Francisco. Also, Sports Leisure has a variety of day trips to see Giants baseball games throughout the year. The Dodger game in April is already sold out, so you'll want to go to that list now and take a look at yourself signed up. You can go to sportsleisure.com for information on any of the Sports Leisure trips to see the Giants at spring training, to see the Yankees at the beginning of the season, or any of the day trips throughout the 2026 season.
Boy, and I'll tell you, folks, the only way to go to a Giants game is with Sports Leisure, because they basically drop you off right in front of the ballpark. You go in, you sit in some really super seats.
Yeah.
And when you're all done, you go right back down, you get on the bus, you have a little glass of wine and a couple of donuts or whatever it is they're serving that day, and make your way home. It's really, really slick. That's all I got to say.
It's okay. And you know, when the traffic has gotten so bad, it used to be you could drive to San Francisco in an hour and 45 minutes. I mean, you and I can remember times like that. Now it's the better part of 2.5-3 hours each direction. So you're sitting on the bus and you really don't care what the traffic is outside. Like you said, you can have a glass of wine when you leave the ballpark because it'll be out of your system by the time you get home. And a super secret is that Sports Leisure sits on the club level at the ballpark. And For years and years and years, we thought that the lower level was the best place to sit. Not quite so true. There are several levels at the ballpark, and the second level actually offers the best sight lines. And the other thing it offers is semi-private concessions and restrooms, much, much better baseball experience. So that's where we sit, is on that second level. If you're a Giants fan and you're going on your own, it's called the club level. You might want to check out those tickets. In some cases, they aren't as expensive or aren't any more expensive than the ground floor lower deck seats, and they offer a great view of the ball game. And if you want to get in the shade, try to get some seats in the higher numbered rows on the giant on the third base side, and then you won't have to sit in the sun all day.
Super. Hey, Mark, are you Sports Leisure and or you personally had any experience with AI, either booking something or like my experience yesterday at a Taco Bell where an AI took my order, unsuccessfully, I might add. But fortunately, there was a real person at the window when I got there to keep me from buying two burritos instead of one, and actually getting the one with the right ingredients that I wanted in it. So, you know, it was kind of nice. She had a nice voice. She seemed a good demeanor for an AI. But how about you?
Well, AI has exploded in the travel industry because a lot of the travel, when you're thinking about going someplace, one of the things you do is a lot of people go and do their own homework, and they do this on different levels. The internet allows you to do a lot more of your own homework than you ever could have done when I first went into business. You can basically go down the rabbit hole and be gone forever if you decide to look up your own stuff, and AI can help there. But what's happened in the travel industry is that all of that fluffy verbiage that you read in brochures and stuff, well, people have to write that, and you have to pay people to write that. And guess what? AI will write it for free. So the only problem is that when AI writes that stuff, at least for me, I can get a sentence and a half into it, and I know immediately it was written by AI. There are a lot of generalities and a lot of flowery words and very few factual things. And that's what tells me oftentimes that I'm reading. So just be careful when you're shopping and doing your homework now. You're thinking, wow, that sounds kind of fluffy and kind of too good to be true. Well, it's probably because it is too good to be true. It isn't something that's actually real. Instead of asking AI to book your flights, why not just go on the airline app, which is easy enough to do, and find your flights yourself? But where AI can help you with your travel now is, let's say you're staying in a hotel in downtown New York. My company stays at the Marriott Marquis at 45th and Broadway. So what you could do is you could ask AI, what attractions are within walking distance of my hotel? And AI, I did this, and AI spit out 37 things that are within a mile of the Marriott Marquis Hotel in New York that you could walk to. Some of them would be for mature travelers, some would be for families, some would be for adventure travelers, even in New York City. Some would involve taking the subway a couple of stops away from Times Square. So literally within 30 seconds, I had a list of more stuff than I could do in 3 days from my hotel in Times Square. So that's where AI can help you right now, is by suggesting things to do that you might not find on your own, no matter how much homework you did.
Yeah, I agree 100%. This article that Chris Elliott recently penned talks about how to use AI to plan a trip. And I think his advice in regards to starting small makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it really does. It ask AI to help you with a part of the day, or what is the best way? You're in a major city like New York, and you have things like the subway, so you're not necessarily dependent on taxi cabs and Uber. So you could ask AI, what's the best way to get to 7th Avenue and 63rd Street? And AI might suggest a variety of different ways to get there. Some would be different price points and things like that. But as Chris really points out here, AI is really in its infancy stages, and you really want to verify everything that it suggests, because it may suggest you going someplace on a day when that attraction is not open. Or just looking at this list here in New York City, I can see one thing already that has very limited hours and another thing that doesn't exist anymore. and literally, I printed this out before we went on the air this morning. So AI knows a lot of stuff, but AI doesn't know everything. And some of the stuff that AI knows is not accurate.
How much different information is AI going to give you? Like you indicated, they gave you a list of places to go, and some of them didn't exist any longer.
Right.
If you just did a Google search for that information, isn't that what AI is doing? Because a Google search will result in the same thing, telling you about a restaurant or a place that no longer exists, or the hours are not correct, because it's not always right either. So what does AI have as a resource that's different than what you find on the internet?
Every AI's resource is everything that's been put into it. So people who are trying to create AI travel resources, of course, are going to try to put every piece of information they can possibly think of that might be helpful to you. The hours of an attraction, the location, the how to get there, the behind the scenes tour that they offer that maybe they don't advertise to everybody. Also, to your point, Tom, if you do a Google search, you're going to get an AI answer.
Yeah.
So the answer that comes up, the first answer, is going to be AI's answer. So again, just be really careful. I mean, be really careful. The landscape is littered already with stories from people who AI told them this, and they thought, well, AI is God, and so that must be true, and it turned out not to be true. So they ended up in a place on a day when the attraction wasn't open or it wasn't accessible to them. And unfortunately, it would have been open or accessible the next day, but now they don't have the ability to go back and rearrange their itinerary. So you have to really be careful about asking AI to do big things. Ask it to do little things. And as you're confident with that, you know, where you're staying in a hotel, you're in a small town, and you don't know anything about the town. And so you could always pull up your GPS on your phone and try to figure out where places are to eat. Ask AI, say, is there a good steakhouse in town? You know, what's a restaurant that locals strongly recommend? Now, you may or may not get what you're looking for, but at least you're going to get more information than you had when you started. And that's the way to use AI currently. I don't think we're too far away from AI being able to responsibly plan itineraries and probably book things, probably talk to AIs on the other end. And just like your order taker at Taco Bell the other day, But how nice that Taco Bell was smart enough that they knew that already, you know, that the system isn't perfect yet. So let's have somebody there to help. So when you're using AI to plan your travel, don't make it the almighty, all-powerful being. It's just a tool that's there to help you and help you find things. As a tour operator, that's what I'm using it for. Tell me some things, some off-the-beaten-track things in Santa Barbara, California. And when it prints out a dozen things, I may already know eight or nine of those things, but it may tell me something really important about one of the things that I didn't already know. So that's where AI can help you, is it can provide an extra layer, particularly for those of you who are off the beaten track people. We were talking about Route 66 earlier. Go and put in a stretch of Route 66 and say from St. Louis to Joplin, Missouri, tell me some things to see along Route 66, and you will be just floored by the number of things. Your Route 66 tour just went from 10 days to 20 days, so real easily.
Being the Route 66 kind of guy, have you done that?
I have not yet.
Tell us how accurate it is.
All right, I'm working on the western side, so I'll do that and report back to you next week.
By the way, if you're just joining us, all this travel stuff, and you're saying, isn't this Sacktown Sports 1140? Where's my sports? Well, we're the travel guys. We're here for 1 hour every Saturday. You can also find us at travelguysradio.com, and we really appreciate being part of the programming. Remember now, if you're using AI, just like anything, guard your data.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. All right, what's up next?
Let's see. I think we promised people that in the odds and ends portion of the program, next we're going to talk about, first of all, a recommendation or some information from a listener in regards to picking your cabin when you get on a cruise ship. And we're going to also talk about what the experts, looking into their crystal ball, are saying about travel in 2026. That's next, right here with the Travel Guys. The home of the Sacramento Kings and San Francisco 49ers, who'll be playing later today. I know, Mark, you don't follow football too much, but when you got a game as big as the 49ers in Seattle, it's got to attract a little bit of attention.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting finish to the 49er game last week, or...
Yes.
Perhaps a disappointing finish to fans of the opposing team, but nonetheless, yeah, I'm going to watch the 49er game. I think we're going to have the 40 days and 40 nights of rain continue, I think, later on here today in Sacramento, and some of it's kind of blowing by my window right now. It seems like we're getting a lot of rain this year.
So far, yeah.
I guess it's a good thing, though, because they were talking a couple weeks ago, when the first one of these things came through, and they said, you know, most of the water is heading toward the north part of the state, and that's where all the reservoirs are, and they're low, and so this is a good thing. So I'm like, all right, I'm good with that. I'm not a meteorologist. Hey, last week I wanted to share this with folks just for a moment. I spent my Christmas, as I do many years, in the St. Louis area, and I was reminded, went shopping with my favorite cousin a couple of days after Christmas. She has a men's store that she always takes me and allows me to pick out a Christmas present. And it's in Old Town St. Charles. And there are lots of old towns around the country. But the one in St. Charles is probably the best one in terms of restaurants and shops, and not just a bunch of cheap souvenir places or something like that. But if you ever get back to the St. Louis area any time of the year, is really a lovely time. It's decorated beautifully for Christmas, but in the summertime or any other time too, just a walk down the street in St. Charles. It was the first capital of Missouri because it's right on the Mississippi River. And of course, back in the day, that was the way people got around, was by using the river. That was their transportation. And so St. Charles is right along the river there. The first capital building is there if you're a historical person. But even if you're not, like I said, my favorite clothing store in the whole country is on the waterfront there of the Mississippi River. If you like old towns and you like history and you like to look in cute shops and stuff like that, why, St. Charles is something that I would really recommend. All right. We had a listener, Tom, who sent in a note here, and she said, I know you're always telling your folks things to make them a smarter traveler, but she said this one piece of information would have made my 12-day cruise a lot better. She said, I learned that rooms at the front of the ship are bumpier than others. And if there is one piece of information that you could share with somebody that's getting ready to go on a cruise, it's that piece of information. Is that when you get out on the ocean and the ship is going up and down, and no matter how many stabilizers they have and stuff like that. And her comment here was she spent most of her cruise feeling queasy and seasick.
Oh, boy.
And really and truly, the roughest cabins generally are the ones in the front of the ship. So if you're tooling around the Mediterranean and you're not as likely to get, you know, huge ocean-going waves, that's one thing. But if you're out in an open ocean, then this is something. Also, there's more noise because as the ship goes over the waves, there's going to be a lot more noise in the front than there's going to be in the middle of the ship. The most stable place is in the middle. And the most stable part of the ship is from the middle down. So higher up, the higher you are, the more susceptible you are to winds and the like. And the front of the ship in particular, you are susceptible to high seas. So this lady really put it well. I learned that rooms at the front are bumpier than others.
What about the back?
Well, the back is more stable than the front. But okay. Really, if you're somebody who has any seasickness issues, then don't look at the back or the front. And you're going to say, well, wait a minute. Those cabins are a little bit less expensive. There's a reason, perhaps, that they're a little less expensive. Because people who have been there before might not, you know, jump to take one of those.
Well, I've been on a couple of different boats. They weren't ships, for seagoing, per se. But they were big enough that if I started feeling queasy, they would recommend go to the middle of the boat. Find the middle of the boat and be there, and you'll feel the motion a lot less. So I was always the guy that's hugging the mast if it was a sailing vessel. Where's Tom? Oh, he's over there. He's holding the mast up right in the middle of the boat while everybody else is having guacamole and beer.
Guacamole, yes. I'm not a big fan of guacamole, but I wouldn't even be able to look at it on a ship. just saying. All right. We have
thank
some.
Thank you, listener. Thank you, listener, for that information. By
yes,
the way.
Thank you very much. The odds and ends section here. We talked a little bit about what's coming up next year, and I wanted to take just a couple minutes here. We could spend the whole show, hey, preview of 2026, and what the heck would we really talk about? Because I read a dozen articles this week of everybody in travel who thinks they know, everybody from CEOs of big companies to people who publish magazines to people who are general managers of hotels to people who are just heads of tourism entities in large and small cities, and nobody knows. This is kind of similar to last year when we were about to have a change in the White House. And some people said, well, you know, travelers and people who play the market have something in common. They like certainty. They like to know what they're getting into. So for travelers last year, they said, well, you know, let's wait and see. And things held together pretty well. And so travelers went and they traveled. A lot of it was at the last minute. Last-minute travel tends to be a little bit more expensive than travel that's planned in advance, particularly if you're competing with a lot of other last-minute travelers. Supply, demand. So when the supply starts to wane a little bit and the demand goes up, the price goes up with it. All of these CEO and people who claim that they know things for next year are all pretty much hedging their bets once again. But what they're saying is that uncertainty creates a certain amount of certainty. So what they're saying is we've already been through this before last year. Mm-hmm. And of course, this year we just took the guy from Venezuela and he's, you know, enjoying first class comfort on his way back to New York City right now, I think. But anyways, so who know? The point is, who knows what you're going to wake up to tomorrow? These guys are saying, gals are basically saying, yeah, we know that. We know that things are going to be uncertain, but we think travel is going to be fine anyway. And they're suggesting to people that, you know, you do save if you've got the proper kind of protection and insurance and things like that, then booking travel in advance can be less costly. If you don't cover yourself properly, why? And you're one of those people who gets up in the morning and goes, oh, no, my God, the sky is falling. Chicken Little, I can't go down the street to the grocery store. Why, then that's not a good idea for you to plan your travel 8 or 10 months in advance, because all you're going to do is fret about it between now and the time to go. So for you, it's better to wait until the last minute. But for people for whom, as the travel experts are saying, uncertainty is becoming a little bit more common and you're a little bit more comfortable with a certain amount of uncertainty, then you can do that. The other thing you can do is stay in these United States, celebrate the 250th anniversary of the country, or take a trip down Route 66, the centennial of the old highway. And you can still have a good time if you're somebody who doesn't want that uncertainty of crossing the ocean. And make sure you go to the drawer and make sure your passport is good all year.
There you go. In fact, maybe good a little bit further out. All right, that's wrapping up another edition of the Travel Guys. Remember now, check us out at travelguysradio.com, ukradio.com. You can get replays of this show and other podcasts there, as well as at Sactown Sports 1140. It's a wrap for today. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. Mark?
Thanks to the gang at Sactown Sports for making us feel so welcome. And remember to dance like nobody's watching. We'll talk to you next Saturday at 11 o'clock. Dream.